Hello, hello.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for coming out. It's really a great pleasure to be here. It's fun in some ways to be a member of a neighborhood who, when you live in the home city of the conference, it's a little bit different. You feel like you're hosting everybody. And so welcome to Baltimore. It's great to have the convention, the number 50 here in Baltimore this year. Fantastic. After 2 years of waiting, but we finally got it. This is a story about Roland Heeman, who I think needs no introduction to Sabre people, as important as he was to this organization and how much he valued it and was valued in return. I don't think a lot of us would have gotten as involved as we were if we didn't know him. I know he had a role in it for me. So I'm going to start the presentation with a little bit of a video clip of a television show that was filmed here in Baltimore. That's the Press Box Magazine, and they had a little cable TV show. Stan Charles, some of you might know, Stan the Fan here in Baltimore, is a local sports legend himself. And this is a story about something that took place at Sports Legends Museum a few years ago.
Tonight I'm spending the night in one of the 10 most haunted buildings in the world, which happens to be right here in Baltimore, Camden Station. And we are down in the basement here, and I'm sleeping in the Negro Leagues bus exhibit, and I'll let you know what happens.
Welcome back to Inside Press Box. That's our ghost hunter, Charlie Vassalero, as he prepared to hunt a few of those spirits at Sports Legends Museum. Earlier this week, Charlie and I talked about his experiences that night, so let's take a look and a listen.
And I'm here with Charlie Vassalero, who authored or penned the cover story for the June issue of Press Box, The Living Spirits. What's it, Chasing Ghosts, Memories, and Dreams?
Yeah, we were having a little bit of all that there that night.
Now, tell us a little bit about what that evening was like. Of course, we arranged with Mike Gibbons, the proprietor there, the director of the Babe Ruth and Sports Legends Museum, to have you sleep over there. And we arranged to have Roland Heeman, great baseball historian and longtime general manager of the Orioles. So tell us from there what this experience was like.
Well, I have to say the best part was being able to spend so much time just with Roland, because he's a museum exhibit himself. Just picking his brain all night was a joy. I will say that going into the place, there was a little bit of anxiety and nervous apprehension. I had heard a lot of tales and stories about people, you know, having kind of haunting experiences in there. Some people didn't want to go on the record about it. They were either frightened or nervous,
traumatized, or something like that.
Afraid of appearing insane, you know, because I think sometimes when you mention that you saw a ghost or you thought about seeing a ghost, people look at you a little funny, but people have told me stories there.
Now, we've had this idea at Press Box for about 4 or 5 years based on that movie, I think it's called Night at the Museum, yeah, with Ian McGregor. But we came up with this idea based on, what, a website out of Toronto or something?
Yeah,
rated the Sports Legends Museum specifically as one of the top 10 scariest buildings.
Yeah, it came up on a newspaper website. I think the paper's called the Toronto Star. And, you know, it was brought to the attention of the people at the museum that they felt that this building was spooked. And I don't think this hauntings that in the building have anything to do with sports, so to speak. The building's got such a history,
yeah,
and it's really got a lot of Civil War history and also some railroad worker union labor strife history. So there was some violence that happened in and around this building.
And also, even if the violence didn't happen there, I think bodies during the Civil War,
yes,
were sort of stored there briefly
Civil
or something.
Civil War dead were kept in the catacombs downstairs on the way to being sent wherever they send them. It was also a stop on the Underground Railroad for people. So it's got a lot of rich history. And one of the things I love about that Sports Legends Museum, aside from all of the great stuff that's in the building, is just the building itself.
Yeah.
And that it's here in town and it's been so well preserved. It's such a great landmark.
Great job by our art director, Brad Muirholtz, who works at TBC, Trahan, Burton, and Charles, in conjunction with John Panisi, an illustrator who did an absolutely phenomenal job. And Panisi essentially donated his work in lieu of a payment we're going to make to the Wounded Warriors Project. So
wow.
I wanted to get that in there.
I was unaware of that. I was completely surprised. I didn't know it was going to be an illustration. I assumed it might be photographs. I think the likenesses are amazing. And it really captures the essence of what went on that night. I remember looking at the picture and I was saying, that's just how it felt. You know, it just felt like that picture looks.
Well, we were looking to chase the ghosts and the nightmares and the dreams and memories. And I think we got a lot on the memories. It was not a particularly scary night, though, was it?
Yeah, you know, maybe we were so ready for it, and it doesn't happen when you're ready for it, I guess. You know, I tried to position myself and Roland in what I thought was the spookiest part of the museum,
right?
Where I had heard stories about things happening and people seeing things. The guy who was kind of chaperoning us that night told a story about imagining a dog going by. There's no dogs allowed in that building, and there would be no reason to have a dog in the building. But he said he saw a dog go by there one time, right around the corner. And I'm talking about down in the basement, in the lower level, in the Negro Leagues exhibit,
right,
which is by one of the exits. It's also my favorite exhibit in the museum. Everybody's got something that they like the best.
And we've got to give thanks to the folks at the Hilton. They loaned us the beds for this evening there. And what kind of night's sleep did you and Roland get, or were you up all night talking about these stories?
The beds were surprisingly comfortable, but first we walked around the museum. We met at our appointed time and place with the guy who's going to show us around. Roland had never been there before, so there was a lot to see.
Roland had never been there. That's right.
Yeah.
By the time they opened, he had probably been gone from the Orioles, yeah.
So I kind of ran him into the things I thought would be of particular interest to him, especially the Orioles' history. You know, every sport is represented in there, but we were focusing on baseball that night. And so we went through the Orioles Hall of Fame, and he was looking at these cases, these like glass cases that have names and pictures. And he was most interested in the guys he had wheeled and dealed for.
Yep.
Guys he acquired in trades, guys who he traded to get other parts. He looked at, I think it was Mike Boddicker's case, and he goes, oh, one of the best trades I ever made, Mike Boddicker for Curt Schilling and Steve Finley, you know?
So it was Brady Anderson.
Yeah, Brady Anderson. So he was looking around through that, and that's, everything was evoking memories in him throughout the evening. When we got downstairs to the Maryland State Sports Hall of Fame, which I really love, and there were some great things in there for both of us. I didn't know Jimmy Fox was Roland's childhood hero as a ball player. We saw him in there, and there was one guy named Bill Werber who I had a lengthy kind of history
with.
His
illustrations were in there in the middle of the picture, yeah.
Great job by John again, evoking that image of Bill Werber. And Bill Werber has something to do with me and Roland actually meeting each other. He's kind of the linchpin in the whole thing. And it's in the story, of course, if people want to read all the details.
Well, that's where we're going to end this right now. And we do urge people to pick up the story either in the print edition of this month's Press Box, June edition, or go to PressBoxOnline.com. And you can read all about the living spirits of Sports Legends Museum by Charlie Vassalaro, along with his, who was Don Quixote's partner?
Sancho Panza.
Sancho Panza.
Yeah.
And Roland Heeman. And we will be back with more right after this.
Well, it's a big part of the presentation is that video, so I'm going to roll through the next part real quickly, but it's funny, like, you wonder, how did something like that happen? It was a kind of a strange night. Stan Charles called us up, and he called me up, and I had some haunting experiences working for the Babe Ruth Museum many years ago, so he asked me if I'd look into this, and he said, could I get Roland to do it with me? And Roland was in Arizona, and I called him up on the phone right after Stan called me, and in his typical fashion, he just said, well, Charlie, when do you want to do this? I'm going to be in Baltimore on April 12th for Frank Robinson's statue unveiling. I could do it then. Just like that, he said it. So, all right, well, we'll do it then, I guess. So, he comes rolling in, and the scenes with the beds rolling in are so funny. And it was a crazy night. We didn't really sleep. We just kind of stared around, and we drank a lot of wine across the street before the thing started. So, I'm trying to get these in the right order. I think it is. Okay, slide 2, slide 3. So here's a picture of Frank Robinson. And that's my father leaning over Frank Robinson's shoulder and my stepmom, Pat. This was out in Arizona. Roland and I, our connection started there when he got his job with the Diamondbacks. I was living out there. And so I got introduced to him via Norman Macht, an old-time Sabre guy, and this Bill Werber glove that's here. That's a longer story than I can tell right now. But this is at the first event they ever held at Bank One Ballpark. It was a dinner, and it was part of a conference called Diamonds in the Desert. Some of you people might have been there. It was way back in 1998. There we go. All right. And that was the first event they ever held there. And it was all Roland's fault. You know, I got in touch with him about it, and he got Jerry Colangelo to give host the banquet and do everything, for free. I met a lot of great people through my relationship with Roland, and we have a real great network of friends. Here's one of my favorite pictures of Janet Marie Smith and Roland Heeman back in the days when they're discussing the transformation, I guess, right, from Memorial Stadium to Oriole Park. Here's Greg Schwalenberg on the far end, the former curator of the Babe Ruth Museum. We're sitting with Roland at a spring training game out in Salt River Fields. You can see Roland's hand on my shoulder and his World Series ring. That's the White Sox one from 2005. Here is something that was really spectacular. We Janet and I were able to take part in kind of Roland's This Is Your Life tour a few years back in 2018. This was arranged by Charles Steinberg, who you see there on the far left in the photo. And we ran around from Cooperstown to Boston to Pawtucket and just kind of went through Roland's life journey. It was so much fun. They gave him the key to the city, and they renamed the Little League field after him in Central Falls, Rhode Island, where he was from. There he is holding up the key. It was funny. He's sitting at the podium. I don't know how many people were there to watch the ceremony, but he looked out at the field and he said, "I made a lot of errors on this field." We're on the field with Dave Dombrowski and at Fenway Park. They let him throw out the first pitch. You know, I don't think Roland, that's one of the few teams he never worked for, the Red Sox. But, you know, it was funny seeing him in that jersey. But they treated him like royalty. Tony La Russa was also working for the team at the time, so he had a lot of friends there. And what a thrill to be walking around on the field at Fenway Park. And he threw out the first pitch. There's his whole family there. And, you know, his sons and daughters have always treated me like a brother or sister in the family, which is really neat. I remember getting the call for this event before Roland even knew it was ever happening. There they are sitting on the footsteps in front of his house. There he is in the field at Pawtucket and with his wife Margot there. He threw out the first pitch. When you go with Roland to the Hall of Fame, he always goes over to Bill Veeck's plaque and rubs his head because that's his hero and mentor, and he does that every time he's in the Hall. And Roland's got a plaque at Scottsdale Stadium in the Arizona Fall League Hall of Fame, and I do the same thing when I'm there. There we are. There's Roland's plaque, and we're standing at Scottsdale Stadium. It's Roland taking a nap at the winter meetings in D.C. a few years ago. He was a famous napper. And I think in a lot of ways it might have been the key to his success, because then he'd be up late all night. And I think if he got that hour or two, whatever it was that he needed to get in, that was good. Here he is with the crowning moment of his entire career. I don't think he was prouder of anything that ever happened in all of those decades than when they told him he won the Buck O'Neill Award. And I think the criteria for it is perfect. I think he embodies everything that award is signifies, and it couldn't be better to even have a plaque in the Hall of Fame. I don't think it could be. I think that's exactly where he should have been, the first recipient of the Buck O'Neill Award. There again, that was a wonderful time to share with him. I got to write the story for the local paper about it in Cooperstown. And he was crying, of course. Roland was also a big crier. It didn't take much for him to well up. And I know when he got that call from that award, he had to hand the phone off to somebody else. He was so verklempt, he couldn't even do it. His acceptance speech was fantastic. He did some of it in French. And he talked to his mother a lot, who I guess believed in him all the time. And it was a wonderful speech to hear. That's out at the veranda, at the Otisaga Hotel. You don't always get to sit there, especially during Hall of Fame weekend. It's really high security and taped off and guarded off. But that was, he ended up staying one extra day to kind of let it all soak in. So that was, I want to say, either on a Monday or a Tuesday morning after everybody had pretty much left town. He was in high demand. It took a while for me to catch up with him that weekend. When the White Sox won the 2005 World Series, of course, they had brought Roland out to throw out the first pitch of the Cactus League season in Arizona. That's at Tucson Electric Park, which they don't play ball there anymore in the spring. He loved those rings. You know, he's got one from the 57 Braves. He had one from the 2005 White Sox, and the Diamondbacks gave him a 2001 ring, even though he wasn't there anymore, because he was so instrumental in putting that team together. That was another day when he cried. You know, Jerry Colangelo called him up, and he's just bawling, and got that ring too. There's a crazy story about the 57 ring. I'll tell you sometime later. He loved to take them off and put them on other people's hands. Complete strangers all the time. I remember one time we were standing over a display case at the in the Hall of Fame with all the World Series rings, every one. And there were some kids across the table from us, and Roland's hands were on the case, and one of the kids started to look over there. And Roland saw the kid make eye contact with his ring. He just took the ring off and gave it right to the kid to put on his hand. More of the same, a friend of mine at a spring training game. He was just constantly taking them off. This was at a nine conference. The nine conference is there's a few nine attendees here. You may have even heard this presentation back in the spring, but Roland was active in all of those things too. If he could make it to a nine conference, he always would. Sometimes he was just too busy, but when we brought our groups to the games, he would come and join us in the seats. This was at the World Baseball Classic. He got a little, it looks like he needed a haircut that day. There were times where he let it go every now and then. And this was at the Cactus League Hall of Fame luncheon just a few years back. And it's funny, when I put this picture up on some social media pages, people thought, is that your father? And I said, no, but he's kind of father-like to me. But another crazy thing, though, the older he got, the more he started looking like me. I don't know how that happened. This is also at an Arizona Fall League All-Stars game. I left Arizona 22 years ago to move to Baltimore, but I go back in the spring and fall every year, and I spent a great amount of time with him on those trips. Anytime I would go back, we'd go to either spring training or Fall League games together. And one year later, he became an inductee into the Cactus League Hall of Fame in 2019, and I wrote the text on his plaque. You know, he was such a prolific letter writer. I'm sure there are people here in the audience who have received handwritten letters from Roland Heeman, which he had almost perfect penmanship, impeccable printing, and cursive skills. And I remember, this is when I heard of his passing, the first thing I did was open up a folder and get out all the letters that he wrote to me. And I think that's also the last slide in the presentation. Yeah, it is.
Awesome, Charlie.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Just a quick anecdote. The convention that was in D.C., what was that, 2009? Is that about right? I was at that convention, ran into Roland in the hotel bar, and he had that White Sox ring on. I said, oh, Roland, I'm a huge White Sox fan. Is that your world? Before I even finished the sentence, to your point, he took it off, handed it to me, put it on my finger, and I have a great picture of me standing with Roland with the ring, and it was one of my best memories. So awesome.
That's great. I bet there's thousands of pictures like that out there. I think it's the White Sox team that he was on with La Russa. You know, they have a jacket of his in the press box in Chicago. That's the one they dumped all the champagne on. And, you know, he loved sharing that picture and that memory. And I really think that was it, you know.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Perry.
So I, too, have tried on one of Roland's rings. Now, something that I may have missed because I came late, but I just loved it and loved that you showed his handwriting at the end, which was really beautiful. But there is a meeting later on this morning by a group called Baseball Memories that's dedicated to the idea that connecting people with Alzheimer's or dementia with baseball will help stimulate their memories and encourage them to be a community and to engage. And I found that to be very, very true. So I'm wondering, as Rollins' mental state declined toward the end of his life, did you recognize any signs, or was there anything that you saw about him that concerned you, and at what stage?
You know, this is that I like what you were saying about how the baseball memories are, you know, embedded in there. And when I used to drive Roland around to places in Arizona in the last few years of his life, and he would forget where he put his keys. He didn't know what he had for lunch. But if we started talking about the old Milwaukee Braves or something like that, it was all there. It was all there. He would tell me stories about how he met his wife or this and that, and it was in great detail. And I think that's a great job that organization's doing, and I think that's a great discovery of tapping into that baseball memories can get back. I know that you could probably do the same thing to any one of us. I can take a look at the 1973 Mets team picture and tell you the bat boys' names, you know, everything. So,
and yeah. You have been very modest about it, about how greatly you cared for him during those final years, because he had several caregivers that he needed constantly, and you were one of them that he trusted and loved, and so just wanted to acknowledge you for that. So thank you.
It was my pleasure.